Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Welcome to this belated and late night edition of the Worldview, and I was simply unavailable because my extremely attractive audio engineer came to me last week and she said, "My dear, my darling, there is a meteor crater in northern Arizona that I simply have to see." And so we went on a trip to go see the meteor crater. And indeed, there it was. If you've never seen it, it's quite the sight to see. And so actually, I went down to Arizona looking for work, looking for business. And it was I who dragged my poor, forlorn wife along with my three children to go see the meteor crater, and indeed we went and stood on the edge of it and looked over, and there it was. By golly, meteor crater. Pretty cool. Anyway, went down to Phoenix to find business, find work, and frankly didn't find much. You know, now that the communists have taken over, you can really see it down in Phoenix, I tell you what. A fine city it is. And by the way, I want to encourage anyone who does go to Phoenix to grab a sandwich at the Hero Factory, right downtown, not far from the convention center on First Avenue. And the reason I make that recommendation is because not only are the sandwiches quite delectable at the Hero Factory, but the owner is a lovely young lady from New York City who wears a Glock 9mm pistol on her hip as she's sweeping the floor and throwing bums out. And did I mention the sandwich was pretty good as well? The sandwich was pretty good. And so the Hero Factory in Phoenix, highly recommended. And also, don't speed in Phoenix. I should have listened to my friend Crash, who told me. He gave me a warning. But, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men. We were driving around, and it was dark, and suddenly something flashes in your eyes, and you just go, "Oh, they got me!" You look twice. Twice that we know of. We'll wait for the verdict in the mail as they come. Anyway, I got some further advice from Crash this afternoon. He said, "Doug, when they come in the mail, pile them all up and call them and just throw yourself on the mercy of the court. Plead poverty and ignorance that you just don't know anything and there's no way I can afford these tickets. They're $200 a piece. We don't have any. I have three kids to feed." And he said, maybe, they'll throw part of one of them out or something. So I'm ready to start begging with the Arizona officials when the mail starts coming in. But let's get to the news because there's a lot of it to do. Since we were off on the road, I've gotten a little bit behind. But like I was saying, the communists have taken over. And, well, Phoenix resembles a meteor crater if you see some of the subdivisions that are half built around there. But if you think the economy was something to worry about, and the fact that the socialists and the progressives are driving the United States to the edge, well, listen to this. Bill Burton, now this is from the French press agency, Bill Burton, a volcanologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, told the French press agency that the volcano at Yellowstone Park in the United States, which is dubbed a super volcano because of its enormous strength, he said, if an eruption of the super volcano takes place, it would be deadly. It would destroy, well, states, as a matter of fact. Now, how seriously should we take the threat? Well, you be the judge. You decide. The volcano, apparently, they say these volcanologists, which these are not people who watch a lot of old Star Trek and give the symbol and say live long and prosper. These are volcanologists, not volcanologists. They study volcanoes. They say the volcano erupted some 640,000 years ago, and then there were two prior eruptions, 1.3 million and 2.1 million years ago. So approximately 730,000 years in between eruptions. And let's see, so let's do the math here. 730 minus 640. So we should have about another 90,000 years before we have to worry about the supervolcano at Yellowstone. But if you know me and you listen to the show, you know that I'm a young Earth creationist. And not because I'm a religious fanatic, only because of the overwhelming evidence for a young Earth, i.e. all the recent volcanoes and earthquakes, showing that the Earth is relatively young and unstable. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's all kinds of evidence. Anyone who buys into this millions and millions and billions of years, well, you're just a sucker who believes everything you're told by people with PhD after their name. Anyway, they say that an eruption at Yellowstone is unlikely in the near future, meaning the next 90,000 years or so. But I would say that I think that the last eruption at Yellowstone was probably somewhere around 4,500 years ago, maybe 4,000 years ago. And, you know, there's probably been three eruptions in the last 5,000 years or so. And who knows, we could be due for another big one out at Yellowstone. Let's see, Yellowstone's last eruption, according to these same volcanologists who seem to think that the Earth is millions of years old, they say that it sent up an estimated 1,000 cubic kilometers of ash and volcanic rock over the American West and parts of the Midwest, spreading as far south as Mexico. Now, that's an awful lot of dirt to be belched up in the air all at once. And let's hope that doesn't happen. The eruption at Yellowstone was 3,000 times stronger than Vesuvius back in 79 AD, and around 1,000 times stronger than the 1980 eruption of the ever-popular Mount St. Helens. So if you didn't have enough to worry about on your plate, now you can lay awake at night and fret about the western United States exploding. It kind of makes your economic troubles seem fairly tame in comparison. All right, now let's get into some politics. I know that you like to hear about politics. Well, according to the Washington Times, last year the State Department sent taxpayers tabs totaling nearly $300,000 for alcoholic beverages. And that's about twice as much as compared to the previous year. So I guess when you're busy destroying an economy and tearing and ripping out the fiber, the moral fiber of a nation, you need a few drinks at the end of the day, more than a few. So Hillary and the boys are apparently drinking twice as much as they did last year in order to assuage their conscience of the guilt of what they're doing to our nation. Now, the purchases, according to the Washington Times, small and large, included $2,400 to pay for assorted spirits for gratuities to vendors at the U.S. Mission to the United Nations in New York, and $9,500 in Christmas gratuities of whiskey and wine at the U.S. Embassy in South Korea. South Korea, I said. So, I'm looking at a $9,000 bar tab, and you're hanging out with the Koreans? You got off cheap, my friend. I've hung out with Koreans both when I was in the military and in business situations, and a $9,000 bar tab with the South Koreans is relatively inexpensive. So I suppose we can laud the State Department for doing a good job with the Koreans, at least. A State Department spokesman said such expenditures are permitted under law. As part of the department's work in representing the United States and its interests here and abroad, U.S. officials may hold receptions and representational events. And we pretty much need these people to be fairly liquored up and wasted in order to participate in this entire farce that we run here at the State Department. I'm sure you understand. Anyway, the odds are that the personnel there at the State Department will be drunk when Iran explodes its first nuclear bomb here in the next 8 or 10 months or so. And I think we have something on that that we'll get to a little later in the war file, but let's stick with the politics file. The White House is upset at NBC News because last Thursday they published an online column by a blogger who made assertions about the sexual orientation of Solicitor General Elena Kagan, who, as you know, is widely viewed as a leading candidate for the Supreme Court. That's according to the Washington Post. Well, Ben Dominic, who's a former Bush administration aide, wrote that President Obama would, quote, please, unquote, much of his base by picking the first openly gay justice. And then he went on to mention that this openly gay person might possibly be Elena Kagan. Well, Anita Dunn, a former White House communications director, said that CBS, the network, was giving a platform to a blogger who was, quote, applying old stereotypes to single women with successful careers, unquote. Indeed, at CBS, no less. Well, the blogger, White House spokesman complained, people at the White House complained, they were throwing eggs at this guy's car. So he came on, he says, I have to correct my text here to say that Kagan is apparently still in the closet. Which is odd to me, said Dominic, because her female partner is rather well known in Harvard circles. So I thought that all these liberals were proud of being homosexual. But I suppose they want to out themselves on their own terms. Anyway, does anyone doubt that Elena Kagan is indeed a lesbian? And I don't mean she dwells on the island of Lesbos, if you know what I mean. But we'll just let that lie, and we'll let the fight go on between CBS and the White House over who's a dyke and who's not a dyke, and which dyke ends up on the Supreme Court. We'll just sit here and we'll just be entertained by the whole thing. Join me. It's quite a laugh. All right, now, more from the politics file from CNSNews.com. President Obama's Environmental Protection Agency is encouraging the public to create video advertisements that explain why federal regulations are important to everyone. Yes, they're having a contest. Yes, you remember back in the 30s over in Germany, they had these type of contests where people would help the Reich prepare the propaganda. Well, this contest, under the EPA, will award $2,500 to the makers of the video that best explains why federal regulations are good and how ordinary citizens can become more involved in making regulations. This sounds so much fun. And you know, with more and more young people choosing as a career path film, you know, not too many kids these days are in the plumber's apprentice program, but an awful lot of them are majoring in film and theater in the colleges and the universities. Not too many engineering students, but a lot of film students. And so I'm sure there's going to be quite the tussle and competition here in the EPA contest amongst the Obama youth. Now, each video must include the slogan, "Let your voice be heard." And it must direct viewers to the government's regulatory website, the ever-exciting regulations.gov. Where I'm sure a lot of people, young people especially, spend their time. As explained by the EPA press release announcing the contest, the purpose of the video will be to remind the public that federal regulation touches almost every aspect of their lives and to promote how important these regulations are. The government says they have to, the EPA, I'm sorry. Oh, well, they are the government. They say they have to have this contest because many Americans do not understand how rules are made or how they can get involved in the process. The videos should be designed to, quote, capture the public imagination, unquote, according to officials at the EPA. I think they could have just left it at, the video should be designed to capture the public. Yes. Just to capture the public. That's what government regulations do, pretty much. They capture you and I, and they touch. And what's hilarious is the EPA is admitting that their regulations touch nearly every aspect of our lives. In fact, we don't even know it until we're made aware of it, which is usually when they're putting handcuffs on us for violating some regulation that we weren't aware of. Well, now they want citizens to get involved in the process of regulation. I don't know what that means. What, get a government job? I mean, aren't we all going to have government jobs before too long? I suppose they could. All these film and theater students can get government jobs making videos for Herr Obama. Indeed. A sad state of affairs, I must say. All right, now speaking of a sad state, let's talk about Al Gore. Al Gore, his environmental organization, has taken money to raise awareness about the need for clean water from Dow Chemical and some liberals and fascist, communist, socialist, pinko types who worship Al Gore, practically. Well, they're very upset that Al would be taking money from Dow Chemical. Campaigners are outraged, according to this story from The Independent over in London. They're outraged by what they call Dow's blatant attempt to paint itself as a green company and divert the attention from the Bhopal scandal. You remember that. Remember, 25 years ago, in 1984, a disaster at the plant that was then owned by Union Carbide, thousands of villagers were killed, injured, and made sick and are still forced to use contaminated water, which, according to these campaigners, causes birth defects, cancer, and even skin disorders.
Yeah.
So, Dow Chemical, liberals are upset because Al Gore is taking money from a chemical company that kills people, at least according to them. I mean, I don't know if Dow Chemical kills anybody. I know this, though. All these liberals are very much comfortable with taking money and giving money to drug companies that provide chemicals that kill people every single day. Yeah. Are you 486, anyone? Was under the impression that the minions of Al Gore thought that killing people was quite all right, in fact, that it was positive. I heard a report today on the radio that talked about reducing your carbon footprint by not having any children. Yeah. They said if you have a child, you'll increase your carbon footprint by 500%. Why so much? Well, because that child you have could do the dastardly deed and have a child of his own one day, and will just be spewing carbon dust and garbage and pollution into the skies for that would have a bad effect on the turtles or whoever it is these people are trying to protect. They obviously don't like people. But anyway, Al Gore, just again proving that he's a hypocrite. As if I had to point that out. Okay, I apologize for pointing out the obvious. I try not to do that. All right, now speaking of something that's less than obvious, now some of this story is obvious, but some of it is not. Dateline Caracas, Venezuela, former boxing champion Edwin Valero, who had a spectacular career with 27 straight knockouts and flouted a tattoo of President Hugo Chavez on his chest, hanged himself in his jail cell Monday after being arrested for stabbing his wife to death last week. Apparently, Mr. Valero used the sweatpants he was wearing there in the jail cell to hang himself from a bar in the cell. Quite the athlete right to the end, Mr. Valero was. Now listen to this. This is where it gets a little strange. Well, that's pretty strange, that a boxing champion murders his wife and then hangs himself in jail. Strange, it's disturbing, it's sad. Not a tragedy, a horrible, horrific crime. But listen to this. According to, this is from the Associated Press, Valero is the third high-profile suicide of a former boxing champion in the past year. Now, I hadn't heard about any of this, and it's probably because I just can't get into boxing anymore. I used to be into it when I was young. Me and my father used to watch the Wednesday night fights. Or was it the Thursday night fights? Anyway, we watched the fights a lot. But at some point in my life, I realized I cannot be entertained by two men beating themselves senseless. Beating each other senseless, I should say. Yes. I can't find entertainment anymore. And I have some friends who are into Ultimate Fighting, And God bless you if that's how you find your entertainment. There's nothing wrong with it. I just can't do it. I don't know why. Oddly enough, I can't watch baseball anymore. I can hardly watch football. Maybe the Super Bowl or a playoff game. Hockey, I can't. Somehow, sports, I've lost the taste for sport and to be entertained by, and I'm not sure why. It's probably because I'm so jaded and bitter as I grow older that I just refuse to be entertained by things that don't really matter. Anyway, now let's get back to the story. Valero, the third high-profile suicide of a former boxing champion. Listen to this. Former boxing champ and Hall of Famer Alexis Arguello, who was the mayor of Managua, Nicaragua, was found dead at his home in July of a gunshot wound to the chest. A few weeks later, oddly enough, Italian-born former super featherweight and junior welterweight champion Arturo Gatti was found strangled in the Brazilian resort town of Puerto Galinhas. Puerto Galinhas. Puerto de Galinhas. Anyway, Arturo Gatti, wait a second here, was found strangled. They said this was a suicide? Now, his wife was arrested, according to the article, but authorities later ruled that he committed suicide. Suicide by strangulation. I mean, who's investigating these deaths? Is it the Park Police in Washington, D.C.? Is it Hillary Clinton's State Department? Alexis Arguello, a gunshot wound to the chest? And then we got a guy strangled? They call it a suicide? Well, that's just odd. But it's sad to see so many fine athletes not finishing well. Let's just leave it like that. It's just sad. Anyway, let's move on. Hey, Arizona. Now, we were just down in Arizona. I was telling you about the pistol-packing mama who runs the Hero Factory down there. Well, down in Phoenix, Governor Jan Brewer on last Friday signed into law a bill making Arizona the third state allowing people to carry concealed weapons without requiring a permit. Well, that's mighty fine of the folks down. But you know what? The bottom line, down in Phoenix, I think even all the criminals have left town. I mean, you can ask my extremely attractive audio engineer who came to pick me up and was driving around Phoenix in what should be rush hour traffic. And anyway, Phoenix just ain't what it used to be. I think even the criminals have left, but at least everyone who's still there will be able to carry a concealed weapon. Yeah, we appreciate that from the Arizona legislature. Fine work indeed. All right, and moving on into the culture file, Dateline Temple, Texas, from the Washington Post. Temple, Texas schools banned paddling and corporal punishment years ago, but have revived it at the demand of parents who long for the orderly schools of yesteryear. That's right, down in Texas, they haven't been able to paddle kids down there for a few years anyways. Now, I grew up in Texas, and so I can speak Texan when I need to. And I can communicate with them folks down there. Now, we called it getting licks. Now, if you got licks down in Texas growing up, well, it was quite the experience, I must say. Big wooden paddles, some of them had holes drilled in them. We had a wood shop teacher, Mr. Pauly, who was legendary for his licks. And then our science teacher, Mr. Witcher. Eighth grade science, Mr. Witcher had the worst reputation. He was the guy you did not want to get licks from. And why am I... Oh, yeah, Mr. Witcher. I remember... Now, this is a little off the topic. But Mr. Witcher, I remember Mr. Witcher was telling a story about Louis Leakey. Now, I'm in eighth grade, okay? And I'm a punk. I mean, just a smart-mouth punk, as you can well imagine I would have been in my public school years. And I chuckled at the name Louis Leakey. But not just because it was Louis Leakey and I thought Leakey sounded funny, but because I had been restraining myself during the entire lecture because it was all about evolution and how Louis Leakey had found the missing link. Now, this is 1982. And my science teacher, Mr. Witcher, is claiming that Louis Leakey found the missing link, and here I am sitting before you in 2010, and just last week they found it again. It's apparently still missing. Anyway, Mr. Witcher is telling the story about Louis Leakey, and I laughed audibly, which was not something Mr. Witcher was wont to let slide. And he took me out in the hallway, and he lectured me about respect for science and told me I was going to get licks. Well, and then he had to go get his paddle, which was at the principal's office, because when the principal wanted to scare people, he used Mr. Witcher's paddle. Now, I stood there in the hallway for what seemed like 4.5 days, shaking, crying, trying not to wet myself, realizing I was about to get licks from Mr. Witcher, which I had avoided for the entire school year. Mr. Witcher returned, and he applied the licks, 2 licks, for laughing in class out of order. And you know they weren't that bad. At the end of the day, I thought, you know, Mr. Witcher, you got them all buffaloed. Not only about evolution, but about the fact that you're such a tremendous spanker. Because it just wasn't that impressive. I think it was the fear factor, most of all. But anyway, Mr. Witcher, if you're listening, I still don't buy all that Louis Leakey crap either. And I would laugh at your face if you were here. All right, now, do I have anything more from this story? Corporal punishment remains legal in 20 states, mostly in the South, but its use is diminishing, according to the Washington Post. A movement for a federal ban on corporal punishment in schools is afoot. A House subcommittee held a hearing on the practice last week, and its chairman, Representative Carolyn McCarthy, a Democrat from New York, is gearing up for a push to end the practice of corporal punishment once and for all. She plans to introduce legislation any day to ban corporal punishment in the public schools. Anyway, just one more reason to get your kids out of the public schools. I know, I probably beat that horse to death, but I really want to warn you about that. Oh, a joint American Civil Liberties Union Human Rights Watch report last year found that students with disabilities were disproportionately subjected to corporal punishment. Many educators and psychologists say that positive tools, such as giving praise for good behavior and withholding it for bad, are far more effective for discouraging misbehavior. Well, first of all, are there any students left in the public schools who have not been classified as disabled? Aren't they all disabled? I think if you're on Ritalin or if you can't pay attention for more than 25 minutes, you're considered disabled. So obviously, the ACLU and Human Rights Watch would note that disabled students are disproportionately affected because now being a brat and a punk is considered a disability. And back when I grew up in Texas, that was just something you got licks for, you stupid smart mouth punk. Anyway, I suppose that's all about that. I think we should move on. Now, we were just talking about the public schools and the fact that the inmates are running the asylum. Children are being lied to. Their minds are being corrupted, even destroyed. Their physical bodies are being corrupted by one another at the encouragement of educators. And here is what is produced when that happens. A young man from New Jersey, oddly enough, 21-year-old Matthew Clemens, recent product of the public school system, young man from Cherry Hill, New Jersey. He was at a Philadelphia Phillies game, and so was a man and his daughter. Captain Michael Vangelo, who's a police officer, was off duty when he took his 11 and 15-year-old daughters to the Phillies game last week. Well, what they got was a first-hand encounter with the gross national product of the public schools. What they got was insults and vulgarities directed at them. Beer was thrown on them. And eventually, here's what the father said. The father says, "There was an individual behind me. I heard him say, 'I'm going to be sick.'" The father turned around. He says, "I couldn't believe what I saw. That one man actually had his fingers down his mouth into his throat in order to make himself vomit, and he vomited on my daughter." Yeah, he vomited on this fellow's daughter. Police say that 21-year-old Matthew Clemens appears to have been intoxicated. Well, the father, this off-duty cop, he stepped in and with help from a few fellow fans, held Clemens down until police arrived. Held him down? He puked on your daughter. And all you did was hold him down? My goodness, I think the feminization of the American male is complete. If someone puked on my daughter, you'd have to hold me down. Because I'd be bouncing that punk, I'd be bouncing that punk's head off the bleachers. The cops would have eventually taken me away. But this fine, upstanding, feminized American simply held the held the youth down. Hopefully he held his face down in his own pile of vomit or something. Anyway, that's just a sad story. It's just sad.
He probably did more.
Maybe he did more and they chose not to report it.
No. I mean, if the father did something more, he'd probably throw up more.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's true. If the father starts beating him up, the guy then throws up on the father. Maybe he was using good judgment. He's obviously a trained professional. Now, speaking of sad, there are a lot of sissies in California who are weeping this week. Los Angeles-based organization, according to Reuters, this Los Angeles-based organization called Love, Honor, and Cherish, they had carried out a volunteer-driven signature gathering effort to put a petition on the ballot, I'm sorry, to put an initiative on the ballot to overturn Proposition 8, which says that boys can't be marrying boys. And girls and all that. Anyway, it was the anti-homosexual marriage legislation out there in California. Well, the homos, they had 150 days to gather signatures. That ended last Monday in failure. At which a lot of homosexuals bought a lot of vodka. And just wept on into the night. You'll remember, California voters in November of 2008 ended a summer of court-allowed homosexual marriage by enacting a ban on same-sex unions by a vote of 52 to 48%. Now, that's scary, isn't it? That when the American people stand up and say no to open homosexuality praised and called marriage, we can only muster 52%. Now, that is scary. Anyway, the San Francisco federal court is now weighing whether the U.S. Constitution prohibits Prop 8, which defined marriage as a union of a man and one woman. So somehow in the Constitution, probably right in the same section where they found the right to dehumanize and butcher innocent children, and they call that abortion, somewhere where they found that, around there they're going to find out, well, you know what, they also allow homosexuals to get married. It's right there in the, you see the emanation of that penumbra? Well, just look just a little, there's a little bit of an emanation coming off of that one that says that you have to let the homos get married. Anyway, this group, Los Angeles-based Love, Honor, Cherish, you know, that's a euphemism. You know what a euphemism is, right? Oh, did you go to public school? That's okay, I'll stop. You can pause the program and go look it up. It's a euphemism, Love, Honor, and Cherish. Indeed, I say it should be called Cruise, Lear, and Sodomize. You gotta love that guitar. Go ahead. See, it's not real complicated, right? But that's what the homos out in L.A. are. They're wandering around, waking up from the vodka just now, realizing that they failed to, further destroy the culture and themselves. And that's a sad story. Now let's delve into the culture file in the personhood section. Scientists in the United Kingdom, according to The Sun, have created embryos containing DNA from a man and two women. Oddly enough, going on from defining marriage as one man and one woman, now we have scientists creating people. You can call them embryos. That's okay, I suppose, because that's what they are. But an embryo has personhood just as much as you and I do. But that's a side issue. Let's get to this. Researchers at Newcastle University set out to prevent damaged DNA in mitochondria, the batteries that power cells, from being passed on to offspring. So here's what they did. They removed nuclei from the sperm and egg of affected couples, leaving behind the mitochondria. The nuclei were put into one of the fertilized eggs left over after other women had IVF treatment. Fertilized eggs, indeed. That's just embarrassing. This is probably a science reporter. Anyway, it's called a blastocyst. There's no such thing as a fertilized egg, you moron. But I suppose I've beat that horse to death, too. Anyway, this egg had its nuclei removed, but retained its healthy mitochondria. So, can you even comprehend what's happening here? I have a hard time even understanding this, but from what I understand, it worked. And they created not a living embryo. You notice the plural here. they removed nuclei from the sperm and egg of affected couples, and they put that into the blastocyst left over after other women had IVF. Here's the bottom line. 80 embryos were created. 80 embryos were created and lived for 8 days before they were destroyed. Lead researcher Professor Doug Turnbull said, quote, "What we've done is like changing the battery on a laptop," unquote. That's what researcher Doug said. "We changed the battery on a laptop is all, mate." Well, Doug, I'm going to be interested to speak with you on Judgment Day when you realize that what you did was to murder 80 innocent people. You are a mass murderer, researcher Professor Doug, over at Newcastle University. And what you did was a very, very big deal. Not for its scientific merit, but for the sheer barbarity of it. Brave new world indeed. All right, now, on into the personhood file from the huffing and puffing on past. A columnist named Jeff Schweitzer, who no doubt is a liberal, homo-loving, baby-killing, tree-hugging freak. I don't know the fellow, I'm just guessing, seeing as he writes for the huffing and puffing on past. But Mr. Schweitzer is very observant, perhaps more observant than the leaders of National Right to Life and the mainstream pro-life industry. Here's what Jeff Schweitzer, liberal columnist for the Huffing and Puffing on Past, says. He says, Nebraska lawmakers passed a bill banning abortions after 20 weeks based on the theory that a fetus at that stage feels pain. In doing so, says Mr. Schweitzer, their attempt to restrict abortion paradoxically undermines every argument anti-abortionists put forth in making their case. If abortion opponents use pain as the threshold for deciding when abortion is acceptable, then they must agree that all abortions prior to the threshold of pain are no longer in dispute. Mr. Schweitzer, I could not agree more. If the pro-life side is willing to give you that argument that we have to stop it because of pain, then Mr. Schweitzer is right. We have to shut up about all the other abortions. What we've done in Nebraska, ladies and gentlemen, what the pro-life industry has done is yet again undermine the personhood of the unborn child. And this liberal author for the Huffing and Puffing on Past, he realizes it. It's obvious to him. How come the morons in the pro-life industry, especially those of you who give money to people who want to regulate the murder of people, Why don't you idiots understand it? This moron understands it. Are you that stupid? Are you that naive? Are you that disengaged that you just want to write a check to a group that tells you they're pro-life so that you can assuage your own guilt about not doing anything as an entire class of your fellow citizen is butchered? Is that what it is? Are you just not paying attention? Because even the liberal columnist at the Huffing and Puffing on Past, he sees it. It's obvious to him. He goes on. With pain now in the mix, the idea of personhood for a fetus must also be abandoned. You can't have it both ways, says Jeff Schweitzer, liberal columnist. He says, unintentionally, the Nebraska lawmakers created the formulation that before pain perception, abortion is always okay. Let us all agree then, says Schweitzer, using this logic from the Nebraska law, that abortion prior to the day that the fetus can feel pain is never again to be questioned. So folks, even the liberals know what we're doing to ourselves. Or what I should say what the pro-life industry is doing to us. We're undermining our own arguments with these regulations, people. Stop being so stupid. I mean, when a faggot writing for Huffington Post can see what's going on, you can't tell me that the lawyers for the National Right to Life Committee don't realize what's happening. I mean, come on. How stupid are we? All right. Let's move on into the culture file. Dateline Riverside, California, from the Associated Press, 30 people have been cited and more than three dozen roosters have been euthanized after a raid on an illegal cockfighting ring there in Riverside. Sheriff's deputies and animal control officers stormed the ring last Sunday and they intercepted people as they attempted to flee into the desert outside of Riverside, California, fleeing the cockfighting ring. The AP points out that Animal Services doesn't put the roosters up for adoption because... What's so funny about that? I know, the fact that there are people reading this article who are obviously concerned. They say they don't put the roosters up for adoption because they would end up back in cockfighting operations. And another thing is that you can't make a good chicken dinner out of these roosters because their muscles are all stringy. Yeah. So you can't adopt them, you can't eat them. They pretty much just have to put them down and put them in a pile and burn them or something. I mean, the sad part to me is that we can't donate the food to the needy. I mean, we can't donate any chicken wings or chicken fingers to the needy. These cockfighting people are the lowest of the low, by the way. I'm no fan of anyone who gets a kick out of brutalizing animals. You know, the animals I eat, well, I don't know how I hope they're killed humanely. I know if I have to kill an animal to eat it, I try to do it as quickly and painlessly as possible because it's so gross. I mean, I just want it over with. I'm trying to remember the last time I killed an animal and ate it. Huh. Let's see. Remember when we hit that turkey in New York? Remember that? Were you in the car that day when I hit that turkey? I don't think we ate that turkey, though. No. Oh, I know. It was a snake. It was a snake out in West Texas. And I believe that I killed that snake with a car as well. And you don't want to be eating no rattlesnake. I mean, it sounds cool to be able to tell people, yeah, it's some rattlesnake. But, man, it's lousy. Mostly rib bones. Anyway, I did brutalize chickens as a child to try to help my friend of ours who had a farm. We chased the chickens, caught them, and then swung them around by their necks and then chopped their heads off and threw them in a big pot, boiled their feathers off. And those chickens we ate. Anyway, but we didn't make the chickens fight. That's just wrong. All right. Now let's move on into the justice file. And we're going to stop talking about animals and start talking about people. Dateline Baltimore, Maryland, from the Associated Press, Rai Ramkissoon, a young lady, pleaded guilty to child abuse resulting in the death of her son. Now, first of all, I have a problem with that charge. Child abuse resulting in death. Isn't that already covered by the term murder? Or am I just not a legal expert and I'm just a dummy? Child abuse resulting in death. She pleaded guilty in the murder of her son, Javon Thompson, who was 1 year old. She starved the child at the behest of a religious cult leader. The plea agreement contained an extraordinary provision, according to the Associated Press. If Javon is resurrected, the plea will be withdrawn. So this is how ridiculous our justice system has become. In order to cut a deal with a murderer, they're willing to put in a silly provision like, oh, well, okay, we understand this is all religious, so if the child is resurrected, the plea will be withdrawn. Just a note to prosecutors, the child will be resurrected on Judgment Day, but at that point, this plea won't matter. In fact, this plea will redound to your discontent on that day, Mr. Prosecutor, unless you repent, because you are wicked and evil. All right. Now, the cult leader told his followers not to feed Javon when he did not say amen during a mealtime prayer. Three people so far have been convicted of second-degree murder in the case. Ram Kassoon, the mother, was given a suspended sentence and 5 years of probation for murdering a one-year-old child, which makes sense in a culture where you can murder an eight-month-old fetus and just go on about your business. In fact, you can be proud of it. It's your right. Just a bizarre, heinous, evil story. And now into the domestic tranquility file. Fresno police, according to ABC News in Fresno, say 23-year-old Gabriela Espinosa admitted to intentionally drowning her two-month-old baby boy inside a motel room in northwest Fresno. The California Highway Patrol interviewed Miss Espinosa. She told them she had three children at a nearby hotel and that she had drowned her two-month-old. Espinosa's other children, a four- and a six-year-old, were inside the room, but they were not hurt. This is the 17th homicide in Fresno this year. Last year at this time, there were 11. So that's the state of domestic tranquility in Fresno, where this woman will no doubt be charged with child abuse resulting in death, which is just bizarre. Can I do any more of this domestic tranquility file? I really don't want to do it. Let's go to the war file. At least in war, I understand what's going on. This other stuff makes my soul hurt. Artur Gorski, a minister of parliament in Poland, claims the Russians came up with some dubious reasons that the aircraft of President Lech Kaczynski could not land because they feared that the Polish presence would overshadow a similar event hosted by the Russian prime minister a few days before. Mr. Gorski claims that the plane approached the airport four times, and every time the Russians refused to permit it to land. They wanted to send the plane to Moscow or Minsk, he says. And he said they came up with dubious reasons. The first, he said they told the pilot there was too much fog. Then they said the navigation system was under renovation. And then on the third approach, they said that the airport had a landing strip that was just too short. One of the Russian air traffic controllers involved said he believes the Polish Air Force pilot was under severe pressure to land at any cost. It seems that perhaps there was a tremendous pressure to land, and on the ground there was tremendous pressure to prevent the landing. So I guess you decide who to believe. I mean, sure, I mean, Russians don't kill Polish people, right? I mean, that's unheard of. It's unheard of that a Russian governing official would intentionally kill a Polish politician. I know that's beyond the pale. I'm a bit of a conspiracy nut, I guess. Anyway, other people claim there were serious language problems between the control tower and the airport. They say it was known that Mr. Kaczynski once fired a flight crew when they refused to land at Tbilisi and flew to another airport. That's been the rumor. And so they're saying that the president of Poland forced this pilot to land. The question is, why did the plane break up? I don't care if there's fog or a short airstrip or the navigation system is under some kind of renovation. This was an Air Force pilot who had landed hundreds, maybe thousands of times. Why did the plane break into pieces? Why did it crash? Anyway, the tapes of conversations with the flight crew have not yet been released. And so the mystery continues. Now, on into the war file. Two Chinese submarines and eight other Chinese vessels were spotted last Saturday about 90 miles southwest of Okinawa, Japan. Yeah, Japanese Defense Minister Toshimi Kitazawa told reporters that such a situation has not happened before, and we will investigate this, including whether China has any intentions against our country. Yeah. So, according to this article from Reuters, Beijing has been forging ahead with military modernization, and Japan has been calling for more transparency of Beijing's military spending and equipment. This is really eerie when I read the story because, of course, I have a history in Okinawa. My wife is from Okinawa. I lived there for 3.5 years. But I also read Winston Churchill's books on World War II and how he was trying to keep track of how much stuff the Germans were building. And when he found out how much stuff they were building, he became very alarmed and he went to the British Parliament and he said, "The Germans are preparing for war." And they said, "You're crazy. You're just a warmonger." And here we've got Japan calling for more transparency in Beijing's military spending, and it's widely known that China is spending an awful lot of money to modernize and build its military. And I'm just concerned and wondering when and at what point are we going to find out what they're up to. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we are back. We're rounded third and headed for home, and we're going to continue in the war file because I can't take the domestic tranquility file anymore. That's all there is to it. I just can't do it, so I'll move on to war. Dateline Jerusalem from the New York Times. Syria has delivered accurate long-distance Scud missiles to the Lebanese group Hezbollah, placing cities in Israel's heartland, including Tel Aviv, within range. The delivery of the missiles, strongly denied by Syria and yet to be confirmed by sources outside of Israel, would change the strategic balance in the area and increase the risk for war. That's according to the New York Times. I like the way the New York Times reports about Israel. Yeah, you can't trust these Jews, you know. Hey, these are all unconfirmed reports about these Scud missiles, you know. Anyway, I suppose we'll find out eventually. Pinchy, whether or not the Jews were telling the truth. And I'm sure Pinchy's happy to just wait until something in Tel Aviv blows up. One official in Israel, if they can be trusted, said that they were Scud-Ds, the most accurate and long-range of the Scud class of missile popularized by the late Saddam Hussein. American and French officials have both said that they were aware of the Israeli concerns, but did not know whether the missiles had actually been delivered. State Department spokesman Philip Crowley said, "If such an action has been taken, and we continue to analyze this issue, clearly it potentially puts Lebanon at significant risk." Huh? What did this idiot just say? I can't even understand what Mr. Crowley said, and I suppose that's why he's a spokesperson for the State Department. He speaks in circles very well. Anyway, whose intelligence would you trust? Would you trust the Jews and the Israelis? Or do you trust Hezbollah? Well, we know where Pinchy and the New York Times come down, right? Let's see here. You remember that Israel fought and lost, in my opinion, a month-long war against Hezbollah in the summer of 2006, in which the Shiite militia fired hundreds of short-range rockets at Israel's north. Since then, Israeli military officials have repeatedly said that Hezbollah is building up a far larger and more lethal arsenal, storing up to 40,000 rockets in underground bunkers in southern Lebanon. If you trust these Jews to, you know what's going on. I mean, they're only fighting for their very survival. It's a good chance they're exaggerating. Well, here's the thing. Hezbollah won that war in 2006. And it emboldened them for the coming war, the next war, which will be even bigger and may be started when Mahmoud nukes Tel Aviv. Yeah. I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility, right? Do you think I'm crazy? Surely an Islamic madman wouldn't use a nuclear bomb on Jews. No way. That would never happen. Doug, you're crazy. All right. We need to talk with Mahmoud. We need to negotiate. Maybe with some sanctions. Yeah. All right. One more from the war file from the Reuters wire. Somewhere aboard a U.S. military aircraft, U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said last Tuesday that Iran is not expected to be capable of producing nuclear weapons for at least a year. Maybe more. Really, Bob? That's not so encouraging. In fact, it's quite alarming. In fact, if Iran is indeed within 12 months of developing a nuclear bomb, the time to strike is past. We've probably missed our opportunity. It's really nice of you, Mr. Gates, to sound the alarm, but the horse has left the barn, sir. On your watch. Probably at least a year, maybe more, said Gates. Great. There's our intelligence. The Jews say there's 40,000 rockets in southern Lebanon and Scuddies, and our defense secretary saying, oh, well, maybe a year, maybe even more. You know, that's really encouraging. And as if worrying about that and worrying about Yellowstone erupting wasn't enough, Saudi Arabia is set to establish a civilian nuclear energy center as the country pushes forward with economic expansion plans. King Abdullah, it's going to be called the King Abdullah City for Nuclear and Renewable Energy, and it'll be based in Riyadh. And although discussions have focused on civilian uses of nuclear technology, analysts note that the Saudis and the other Arab Gulf states do not want to lag further behind Iran and Israel in developing nuclear technology. Oh, that's all going to be fine. It's going to end with peace and harmony and everyone getting cheap electricity, right? Yeah, if you read the New York Times. All right, an Iranian cleric named Hojatulislam Kazim Sagidi. He was quoted as saying last week, many women do not dress modestly. They lead young men astray. They corrupt their chastity and spread adultery in society, which consequently increases earthquakes. I mean, you had me right up to the earthquakes part, Imam. I mean, isn't this the way it is with all these counterfeit pagan religions? Is they take sound religious thought, and they just take it too far, they exaggerate it, they mystify it, and they just end up looking like idiots. Now here's the interesting fact, though. Seismologists have warned for at least two decades that it is likely that Tehran will be struck by a catastrophic earthquake in the very near future. It's one of the world's most earthquake-prone countries, according to this Daily Mail article. And the cleric's unusual explanation of why the earth shakes follows a prediction by President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad that a quake is certain to hit Tehran. And Mahmoud advises many of Tehran's 12 million citizens to relocate. He did that just last week. Is he getting ready for an earthquake? Or is he getting ready to nuke Israel and he knows what's going to happen in Tehran and he's kind of telling the people, you know, you might want to move away. I mean, he's already assented to sacrificing half of Iran to destroy Israel. Anyway, there's going to be some rumbling over there. I'll tell you what. All right, and finally, the Toyota Motor Corporation has announced that it will pay a $16.4 million fine, the largest ever, against an automaker, and they will pay that fine to the majority shareholder of General Motors, the United States government. Interestingly enough. Okay, so we can be looking for a new ad campaign from GM very soon. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. This has been the Weekly Worldview. I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank KGOV, KGov.com, Theology Online, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life. Who else am I forgetting? I've probably forgotten someone, but I want to thank you for listening. I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.